This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to Raise Your Game. I'm Audrey Raj. In a corporate jungle obsessed with hype, office politics, and the never-ending race for promotion and power, textbook leadership skills are failing to bridge the gap between management and their most precious commodity, the people. But sometimes the most compelling leadership wisdom can come from the most unexpected place. Meet Bunsiri Somchit. In her 18-year career at NASDAQ-listed AMD, Bunsiri spearheaded the setup of its accounting and financial shared services organization, servicing AMD's global business entities. The culture that she built at AMD Global Business Services has been recognized as an industry benchmark and featured in academic white papers in Malaysia and even the UK. Bun is here today ahead of her first book's launch in Penang. The book, entitled When the Chicken Dies, Everyone Cries, is a delightful read about Boon's childhood kampung adventures growing up in Alostar. She takes inspiration from these adventures to share some kampung leadership takeaways from her 33 years in the corporate world. Welcome to the show, Bun.
Thank you for having me, Audrey. I'm glad to be here.
So before we get started, I have to know, how did you come up with the idea to write this book?
Well, actually, you know, chain of events can happen in one person's life that prompt you to do something. And actually, something happened to me when I was 17. I failed my STPM, and I never talked about that failure. I thought it was such a shame. You know, it's a shame to the family, it's a shame to me. And so, and then last year, I was invited to speak on a TEDx stage. And the topic was, it was TEDx Women, and the topic was momentum. And I felt it was time to share that story, that failure story. But I didn't understand, like, what would the outcome of sharing that story be? You know, I grew up in the 70s when we didn't have the internet, and nobody talked about failure because, you know, you bring shame to the family. And so to me, I just kept quiet about it for years and carried it as a burden. And when I stood on stage and I shared it, and when I finished, I thought, oh my God, people are going to say she's a fraud, or how did she move up the corporate ladder? You know, she didn't even make it through Form 6, you know, and all that. But the surprising thing was I got so much kind of care and love and positive feedback asking me to talk about this to university students and writing a book about it. And so I decided maybe it was the right time to talk about it and to talk about how your childhood stories actually affect you and how the experiences can be used in your corporate life.
The title of the book, When the Chicken Dies, Everyone Cries. Not your regular leadership or life lessons book title. Why name it When the Chicken Dies, Everyone Cries?
Actually, I'd rather not tell the story of why I chose that name, because I think people should buy the book and read it, and then they understand why. But I first used that phrase many years ago when I spoke at a world conference. And it was because when I walked up on stage and I saw the word borderless village, and it prompted me to think that, hoy, everything that I am came because I grew up in a borderless village, the way many of us Malaysians grew up. And the fact that everything was shared, you know, the diversity really existed, you know, then, and it still does now, but it's very different. And maybe that's the reason why I chose that title, because I thought it resonated with what I feel.
The book is, and I say it again, a delightful read. You use anecdotes from your childhood in your kampung to create parables that people can learn from. Now, for the benefit of our listeners, maybe you could give us an example of how you derived leadership takeaways from lessons learned back in Alostar. I especially like the kayu manis story. Maybe you can share that with us.
Okay, so the kayu manis story, or the cinnamon story, is basically about giving specific instructions. I think as a leader, even though, you know, the person has worked for you for a long time, you still need to be pretty specific in the instructions that you gave. So when I was growing up and as a kid, my sister, my elder sister, who loves to cook, by the way, and she's an excellent cook, you know, unlike me, and she gave me 10 ringgit, which was a lot of money at that time, and told me to go to the mama store, which is down the road, to buy kulit kayu manis because she wanted to cook. And I said, okay, fine, I'll go get it. And I took my three-wheeler because I couldn't cycle on the two-wheeler yet. I was on my three-wheeler. And I rode down to Mama and I gave her 10 ringgit and told her I needed kulit kayu manis. Of course, the poor lady and her daughter there were so shocked, and they thought I was going to have a kenduri in my house. But it wasn't a kunduri. I mean, I just needed to buy kulit kayu manis, but nobody told me how much, right? So I assume if you give me 10 ringgit, that means you want 10 ringgit of kulit kayu manis lah. I bought 10 ringgit worth of kulit kayu manis, she put it in a gunny sack for me. It was a little bit too heavy for me on my little tricycle. So I had it on my seat and I pushed my tricycle back and I walked home. And it wasn't that far. You know, kampung is, everything is very near, right? And then you always have shortcuts. And I think we ate that kulit kayu manis till I left for college and I came back. I don't really know if it's still there in the old house, but I'm sure it's still edible because cinnamon, you know, it doesn't spoil, right? I hope. But yeah, that's the lesson I learned, which I compare with my corporate life is, you know, please give specific instruction. Don't always assume that the person understands and know what you want. And I think my sister learned a lesson from that. And we never returned the kulit kayu manis because we were worried that in a small kampung, people will talk about it. And one, they would think, you know, I'm very stupid. And two, they would think my sister never, you know, what is wrong with this family, right? So yeah, we kept the kulit kayu manis.
Did the lessons you learn back in Alostar shape the content of your kampung leadership takeaways, or did you have leadership takeaways in mind and then use examples from your life to drive the message home?
Yeah, you know, like, you know, if you read my book, you'll know that I'm an accident child. There are 8 of us in the family. I'm number 8. And the age gap between me and my brother is like 10 years. And when I was born, my sister was already like, I think, almost 30 years old. And my mom actually thought I was a cancerous growth in her tummy instead of a baby because, you know, she was already late 40s and my dad was in his 50s. So I was a medical scare and an accident. And I'm kind of glad that I came out kind of, even though I'm kind of weird or quirky, but I'm still normal, I hope, you know. And so one of the things I've learned from that, which I feel I use a lot in my leadership, is accidents happen and you can always say, hoi, you know, you live with it, you move on and you find a solution and you fix it and you get on with it and figure it out, right? You know, a lot of people, accidents happen and then they start whining and moaning and groaning. Life is too short to be moaning and groaning about everything. You know, just move on and learn from it and get on with your life. The other lesson I learned was also the fact that when I was born and I was about a year old, my sis got married and they all started getting married because they were so much older than me. They went to university and all that. And then I started having nephew and nieces, which I thought were like the greatest thing in the world because now I have people to play with. But the biggest thing was I was the boss. See, I learned to be a boss at a very young age. Like I was 3 years old, I was already like the kapala, you know, right? And to me, a kapala at that time was massage my back, go make Milo for me. You know, if I play game with you, you make sure you kala, I win, you know, because I'm the boss, right? But that's the leadership takeaway. A boss is not because like you're the highest ranking officer or your title is very big. You have to roll up your sleeves and you have to, you know, you have to work just like everybody else. You know, you have to earn that respect. And I learned it the hard way that, you know, just because I was the auntie doesn't mean that I can bully them. Well, and now they're a lot bigger than me, so definitely not. But yeah. That's a big leadership experience for me.
And one of the other things that I gathered from your book, and this can be quite evident from the start of the book, is that you feel adaptability is key. You'd rather be a cockroach than a dinosaur. So maybe you could explain the cockroach-dinosaur theory and why adaptability and versatility is so important to be an effective leader.
I think in the current economic environment and the world that we live in today, anywhere in the world, things change all the time. And if you don't adapt to a new leader or you don't adapt to a new technology or you don't adapt to a new process or a new procedure or whatever, you're going to be left behind. And the world is so competitive, they will always find somebody to replace you. You know, Don't just sit on your laurels and think that you're indispensable, because you're not, you know. And I think that's the reason why, you know, I used to be one of the trainers for something called the Managers Leadership Experience, and I trained that around the world. And I always tell people I would rather be a cockroach than a dinosaur, because the cockroaches have, you know, existed for millions of years. They were here, like, at the time of the dinosaur, and they are still here. And where's the dinosaur? Other than on Jurassic Park, which is not real, you know, and you watch all those shows, they're not here anymore, right? So wouldn't you rather be the cockroach, even though people say, oh, it's so stinko and it's so dirty? But you know what? It survived. I think that's the most important lesson that you can learn from it.
Indeed. And when we come back, we get Bunsiri Somchit to give us her top three kampung leadership takeaways from her book, When the Chicken Dies, Everyone Cries. Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Best for money, BFM 89.9.
Raise Your Game, this is Audrey Raj. In the studios this morning is Bunsiri Somchit, who's recently penned an interesting book on leadership and life lessons. It's called When the Chicken Dies, Everyone Cries. Ahead of her book launch in Penang tomorrow, she's here to talk to us about the key kampung leadership takeaways from her book, which draws inspiration from her childhood kampung adventures and her 33 years in the corporate world. Now, Boon, you also talk about assessing your superiors, like really studying them and getting to know your boss's ways and their language, and then dealing with them accordingly. I found that to be quite interesting. Why is this assessment so important to being noticed and to climbing, to help you climb the corporate ladder?
Well, in today's corporate world, if you want to be noticed for a promotion or for anything, the word is visibility. Your leaders need to, or your bosses actually, need to know who you are, because you're no longer competing in Malaysia, you're competing around the world. You know, jobs are moving everywhere, right? So one of the ways to actually enhance your visibility is to actually know your bosses and how they like work done, you know? One of the ways that you can actually increase your visibility is when your bosses come and visit. Assuming they're from the US or from the UK, and they come and visit, volunteer to present. You know, the Malaysian, a lot of Malaysians are very afraid to present to the masaleh because they say, oh, my English is not so good. You know, I never grew up speaking English. But if you believe that this is what you want to do, learn lah, right? Go learn. And if the more you speak it, the more you'll get comfortable with it. And so one of the things I always tell people, and I even tell people, you know, who ask me from China and India and all around the world, is the presentation style of your boss is something you should know. Okay, let me give you an example. If your boss likes information in a specific way, you should present it in the way he's comfortable to look at. That means you should know how he presents his data. Let me tell you who you should befriend. His admin. Mm-hmm. The admin can show you exactly how he likes data to be presented. And when he comes and you present it exactly the same way that he likes to see it, guess what? He's going to remember you, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's one way of creating visibility. Learn everything about him, even things like what kind of wine he likes to drink, what kind of food he likes to eat. Don't take him to a restaurant that you know he's not going to eat at, you know? Don't order drinks that you know he's not going to drink. How difficult is it to find out? You would do the same for a customer, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Why can't you do it for your boss? Treat your boss just like you would treat a customer if you want to be visible. You know, that would be my advice. But the most important is how you write an email, how you talk in a conference call, how you prepare your presentation. Look at him and his style, or her and her style, and you know, try to mimic it, but add your own original, you know, your own originality and your own creativity. And I can guarantee you, you know, he's going to remember you.
But people always tell you, you know, dress for the job you aspire to have, act like the person you want to become. You, however, preach being yourself, being your true self when it comes to everything, your life, your dressing, your job, your leadership ways. Why is this?
I think it's important to be comfortable in your own skin. You know, when I was a lot younger, yes, I believed that you should dress like the person that you want to become.
Like your superior, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think I want to look like my superior, right? I think I want to look like myself, you know? I remember when I was a lot younger and I used to go to work in fishnet stockings and high heels and mini skirts, and the HR director would give me a hard time, and my response to him was, as long as I get my job done, what does it matter, right? Yeah. And today it's more casual, you know? I won't say that I still, you know, I dress down all the time, but I think I look at the occasion. Like, I also look at, you know, who's coming and how they dress, because again, it's all about visibility. But I don't have to be like that every single day, you know. I'm like, okay, if the corporate culture is the boss who comes wears a tie every day, yes, I will be in a suit. But if the boss who comes carries a knapsack and is in jeans, okay, I'll be in jeans, you know. But it's all about creating the visibility for yourself and also being comfortable. And every single day when I don't have any visitors, then it's a casual day, you know, why not? I think better when I can take off my shoes. And I think that's how it is.
And one of the lines towards the end of your book, it really got me thinking. You said, stories connect us all, so use it to inspire, to motivate, to drive change. Is this a piece of advice everyone can use across the board?
Yes, I believe so. You know, the newer generation that we work with, the Gen Ys and the Gen Zs, I think they connect a lot easier to stories as they do to pictures than they do to figures and theories. You know, figures and theories are good, you know, for us to work on projects and all that. But I think when it comes to people, you can't put them under a microscope, and you can't be like looking at them and just, you know, they're not ants, right? They're not to be dissected, because I think every single one of us is so different, and that's the beauty of being human. I think stories bind us. You know, when we tell stories, and stories are, you know, tribal stories that keeps communities together. And I think that's very important, and we should keep doing it. And maybe that's the reason why I believe that, you know, every story that you tell and everything that happens to you, like even today, will become a story one day. And you can tell it, and it's a learning experience. And maybe one day I'll tell my grandchildren about how I'm on radio and what it was like. Yeah.
I know there were many key Kampung leadership takeaways in your book. There was always, that's how you ended practically every chapter in your book, right? But if I could ask you to pick just three, which ones would they be? The three main Kampung leadership takeaways from your book.
I think the first one would be about how to be a good kapala, which I already talked about, right? How to be, yeah, a good kapala and not just be a kapala because your name is kapala, right? and what it's really like to be a good leader and to actually have the heart to lead and to do things together. The other one I would say is about using limited resources but to get things done. Many times you're not going to get everything you ask for, right? Budgets and headcount and everything. It's a lot like my bicycle story. I mean, if you have one bicycle and you want to go somewhere, how can you do it and still have fun? Hopefully you don't fall off, but how many people can you put on one bicycle, right? And it's the same about resources. How much can I do with the limited resources that I have, you know? And I think that's another big takeaway. Rather than lament the fact that your boss didn't give you everything, how can I do more with less? The third is always be willing to take risks, and always be willing to, you know, move out of your comfort zone and try new things.
And I'm sure in writing this book, you must have learned some new lessons. Are there any big ones in particular you could share with us?
Lessons when I was writing this book. I think one of the biggest lessons about writing this book was that writing a book is very much like everything else that you do in your life. You have to have a framework. It's quite methodical, and your thought process has to be very methodical in the sense that where the stories fit and all that. That was a big eye opener for me, because I always thought writing a book was very romantic. I was like I imagine it being like Julia Roberts and riding a bicycle and eating pizza and falling in love, you know?
Which Julia Roberts movie is this?
Eat, Pray, Love.
Oh, yeah, sorry, my mistake.
Yeah, right? And so it's not like that. Okay, for one, I don't like pizza. And for two, yeah, I do ride bicycle, but, you know, you can't, like, I can't, like, think of stories while I'm riding a bicycle. I have to concentrate on one thing at a time. So that was a big lesson for me. And I think the other lesson for me was that the book made me realize that I needed a change.
Hmm.
You know, if you read the book and you come to the end, you'll realize that I left my corporate job because I was writing the book. And it told me that it was time to jump into something else. Because all my life in the kampung, you know, you do crazy stunts and you do crazy things. Somebody once told me that you should live your life, you know, the way to become the person that you want to be, right? But I think for me now, I feel like I should live my life the way I used to be. You know, because once you've been in the corporate world for so long, you kind of get pretty comfortable with having people doing everything for you. And so you kind of lose that edge and that hunger. Mm. Because when people tell you to do something, oh, I've done that, I've seen it, I know what to do. I want to be in a place now where I've never done that, I've never seen it, and I don't really know what to do, but I'm going to figure out how to get it done. And I think that's the next chapter of my life, which I'm really looking forward to.
And how can our friends out there get their hands on your book?
Well, I believe the book will be in all the major bookstores right after the launch. And so they can get their hands on it over there. And if they want to connect with me, I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn. And I would love to hear their feedback about the stories that I tell, because I think I truly believe feedback is a gift, and I like gifts. I'm sure you do too.
Of course.
Yeah. So if you enjoy it, please give me the gift of feedback so that I know, you know, what else, you know, maybe if I ever decide I'm going to write a second book, what else I should add in the book and what stories should I tell.
Bowen, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for coming down and speaking to us ahead of your book launch.
Yes, you're most welcome, and thank you for having me here.
We wish you all the best.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Bunsiri Somchit, author of the Leadership and Life Lessons book, When the Chicken Dies, Everyone Cries. I'm Audrey Raj. This is Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.